Hey, welcome to The Conversation. This is Andy Mason, and you're listening to authentic conversations around the messy intersection of faith, family, and business. And we've been on a theme of leadership, talking about how to lead and make decisions in the midst of uncertainty. And what I know is I've been running a series of courses, Hey God, What Now?, Kingdom Business, and one of the delights or highlights of those courses is when I've brought my wife Janine into the conversation and the perspective that she brings. And if you haven't read it already, there's a blog post I wrote, My Best Coach. She's actually the strategic consultant, advisor, counselor, wise adjuster in my life that's really helped me step into so much that I'm doing, putting a pin in my procrastination, so many areas that has been such a support to me. So as we've been going through interviewing different people around how they lead and make decisions, I thought the genius thing would be to actually ask Janine the same. So Janine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
As we dive into this, we've now been married, 22 years coming up this year?
23 years this year.
Yep. Oops. So we have four children. They're 14, 17, 18, rising 19 and 20.
That's right.
It's like there's a lot that's changed. We've become citizens of the United States. There's all of these things that are we're in a home in our home. Like we've got land in this land. Janine, what's some of your leadership role and responsibility?
Well, up until recently, I have been leading Kingdom in the Classroom, it was called, or Kingdom Educators, very similar to Heaven in Business, for those of you who know that entity, but working with educators. Last year, I made the decision to stop doing that, felt like it wasn't really a priority for Bethel, who was sponsoring that in a sense, and they're going on with some other initiatives. So for the last year, my main role and responsibility has been the person that keeps the home front going as everyone deals with COVID, going in and getting groceries, doing all the chores in town as we pretty much shelter at home to protect our vulnerable daughter. And then at this point, just working out what's next for me. That will include some masterminds and some coaching for people, and then just figuring it out from here.
So what's the hardest decision that you've had to make recently, and how did you make it?
I think there's, I could try and pick one big decision. I think over the last year, with everything that's gone on, the more challenging thing has been making 1,000 little decisions every day. How do you keep making those decisions to do what's right when it feels like other people aren't, when other people are... For example, posting crazy stuff on social media that's inflammatory, that's divisive, and you have your own opinion, but making the decision to not do that, making the decision to wear a mask, knowing that there's consequences for that in terms of the way people perceive you, the way they'll assign the way that you vote because of whether you wear a mask or not. So I think for me, it hasn't been one big decision. It's been 1,000 little decisions to keep deciding to do what's right for our family, what's right for me, what's right before the Lord.
And talk to me about, so we got four kids. They are all very independent thinkers, strong opinions. And one of them is more vulnerable than the others physically. Just can you unpack a little bit about that? And then how have you, knowing that we've got people that never ever get sick in our family, and that'd be bulletproof, and then we've got others that are vulnerable, like you just sneeze and they'd get unwell. How do you navigate, just unpack a little bit about what the situation is mm-hmm. with our daughter, and then how do you navigate the diversity within our own strongly determined teenagers in terms of decision making?
Yeah, that's a great question. Our eldest Hannah, she won't get sick at the, to sneeze, but she does have, she has a heart condition and she gets asthma. So for COVID, though, the combination of those two things could literally put her at death's door very, very quickly, because COVID would stir up her asthma, and then having a a strong asthmatic reaction could cause her aorta to burst. So it, she's at serious risk from COVID, could be. And so, but yes, the rest of the family, because of their age and because we're a healthy bunch, is not vulnerable. So we talked at the start about the seriousness of Hannah's condition and the seriousness of what this could mean. But also we talked as a family about wanting to do what was right for the community. So in my opinion, and I think talking to our teenagers, it hasn't just been about protecting Hannah. It has been about protecting the wider community. And so I think if it had been just about Hannah, I think the others might have got resentful or angry at her, like, you're stopping us living life outside this house. But because it's been more about this is the right thing, we feel this is the right thing to do for our community, I think it's been easier in the sense that we've just said, what are the CDC recommendations? We make a decision to live by that. I know that others have made different decisions and, you know, I don't resent that. But for us, it was twofold. It was protecting Hannah. And it was, again, came back to doing what we felt was right as a family. So we're about to all be, all the adults. In a couple of weeks, we get our next shot, and we will be, in a couple of weeks, not vulnerable to the virus anymore, but we'll still be wearing masks and not holding big parties because our decision is to do the right thing to help the community fight this thing off. So I think having a wider view and talking things through and giving people understanding is what's helped us continue to make those little decisions every day to keep doing the things we know to do, even though I'm so sick of wearing a mask and so sick of doing all those things.
One of the things that greatly impacts people that have heard you and what you do is the way that we involve our children in the decisions that we make as a family. Mm-hmm. I know this is a big passion of yours. So the kids are now 14, 17, 18, 20. I mean, they're of that age anyway. Two of the oldest ones could have been traveling, but they're home because of COVID and so on, studying from home. But that's always been the case of involving the children, even from young, in decisions that we're making as adults. Can you talk to me about why is that important to you and how do you go about that and what decisions do you involve your children in and what decisions not to involve your decisions your children in?
Yeah, that's great. I think we've done that because, you know, my heart is that the kids will have built their own history with God. And so involving them in those decision-making with the Lord helps them start to build that. And the story that springs to mind is the house previous to the one we're living in now, where, you know, we'd had some prophetic words. God was going to give us a house. He was going to open up a way where there was no way. And everyone was getting a bit fed up with the waiting, but asking Ben and saying, well, why don't you ask Jesus when he's going to bring this house? And he got a date. And that was the date that we ended up finding that house. And then involving them and saying, okay, guys, here's the ballpark range that we feel like we need to offer for this house. You know, hear the Lord. And then feeling like, again, Ben got the figure that we offered. So when he thinks back and when we can remind him, hey, remember how the Lord came through for you. That's a big deal. He would have been, I guess, about 10 at the time, 9 or 10. And so what a great way to set a 10-year-old up to say, you're the one, buddy, that heard Jesus when that was going to happen. And you're the one that, you know, told us, heard Jesus for the offer that got accepted, that got us into that house. And so I think it's about involving them. I think it's about helping them have understanding and giving them an opportunity to build their own history with God. I also remember times when Emily was younger. Emily is overly responsible, and she would hear us as adults talking, not even involving her, and she would automatically start being worried about how are we funding that, or, you know. And so there are definitely times with younger children to not involve them in the nitty-gritty, to protect them. But I think I look for opportunities. We will, we've been on multiple vacations that financially we're going to be really tight, where we've asked them to pray and help pray in the money, not so much decision making, but again, it's that whole thing of, we do this as a family, we're here as a family, we have an identity as a family. So big decisions that are going to affect them, then I want them to be involved to the level that their age would, you know, allow them to understand and to not feel stressed about it.
So obviously we're involving them in decisions that we know that we're going to do anyway. But then that's an example of, there's a recent example of a situation where I wanted to do something. I wanted to travel. This was back in August of last year. And, you know, numbers were starting to rise in Reading in terms of COVID, and you were kind of like, yeah, maybe you have to quarantine after that for the sake of our daughter, but let's talk about it with the kids. So in some ways you and I were, let's do this, let's move forward. And the kids had a very different perspective. It actually changed what we did, what I did. Can you walk me through that in terms of what happened, your perspective? And then how important is that in terms of developing powerful kids that know how to make healthy decisions as a family?
Yeah, so I got to the point where, with that decision, where I felt like maybe the cost, you having to quarantine when you came home, was worth the benefit because of where you were looking at traveling to. But I suddenly realized this is not just a decision for me, like this is going to affect them not being able to have dad around for 2 weeks afterwards, and the potential of the stress of that, etc. And so again, I didn't want to do something to them, make a decision that was going to impact on them without them at least being heard. And so I think the big deal is when they're heard, that's a really big deal for them to go, I actually am powerful. And, you know, it was our youngest that said, hey, Dad, what about this? That made you really think and change your mind. And, you know, we might have overruled them if we felt like the points they were bringing up weren't valid. But because they were, I think, you know, that's a big deal. And I think we are stronger as a family because we do talk things out and we do listen. And kids, particularly at the ages that our kids are, will have things to offer that are really valuable. And if we can humble ourselves and listen, then we draw from their wisdom and their perspective. I don't, you know, you could have gone off to that travel and come back and it would have been fine. But I think too, Holly really reminded us, we made a decision to do this, and what you're talking about goes against that, and helped me understand why that's okay. And we actually, it's probably not. And she reminded you, if you can trust God to go, then you can trust God to not go, and for the outcome to still be in your best interest. So I love that. I love how your kids can remind you of, oh yeah, you know, faith works this way as well. That's fantastic.
So just for those listening, that was an incredibly painful time for me. That just triggered so much, and it was not fun at all. And you can listen to an earlier podcast where I unpack that side of it and what God spoke through me as a part of it. But it was the right decision, like absolutely the right decision, because that's the most important thing. And it just locked in relationship and covenant and what's most important. Janine, obviously in decision-making, leading, leading as a couple, you're involving stakeholders. So in any decision, it's involving stakeholders. And obviously, our family is stakeholders. But then there's you and I and decisions that we make. And obviously, so question around this is, how important for a focused, driven, visionary leader to involve the quieter members who are stakeholders, whether that's children, whether that's a spouse, whether that's other stakeholders? How important is that? And what would you say to people like me who tend to don't let what's next stop me from experiencing what's now?
Yeah, I think it's critical. It really is critical. You can charge on and change the world, but if you lose your family members, if you lose your team along the way, then you're going to get there pretty lonely. I think also it comes back to what we just said, that Holly had wisdom that we were missing at the time. I think that, you know, any venture you want to do, you want buy-in. And so there's been many a decision we've made, you know, again, around you traveling to different places. Maybe we've limited it to, you know, in the old days, once a month, and you wanted to do an extra one because there was an amazing opportunity. And so we'd go to the kids. Now, you could have gone anyway, but then they'd maybe resent it. But when you go to them and say, here's the opportunity I have, do you think I should go? What do you think God's saying? Now they're giving out of the abundance of their heart. Now they're like hearing from the Lord and they're saying, oh yeah, this is something we feel like God wants you to do. So now there's tremendous buy-in versus, you know, you did this to me and now I have to live with the consequences. So I think it's the buy-in piece. It's the, we get to choose this together, and if there's a cost to it, then we're accepting that cost and we're also trusting God for the benefit or the grace to deal with it.
So what I'm hearing you say is, for a visionary focused, future focused leader like myself, who can tend to get kind of so focused on an outcome or an accomplishment, it is critical to stop, to slow down, to look around and involve the stakeholders. And sometimes God will speak to you through the least likely person. And in our case, it was their youngest daughter. Was critical and shifted me and actually led to an encounter with God. So must listen to your stakeholders, and your family is the most important one. Flip this around. What would you say? So you're speaking to the, you know, the visual leader, the focused person. What about the spouse or the quieter member of that partner? What about a stakeholder who's been quiet or overlooked? What do you do in that situation? And I'm remembering a situation where we sat down with a business leader, and initially he completely ignored you and you felt incredibly dishonored in that relationship. I guess that's one example of how, what would you say to that person, the spouse, the business partner that's a quieter version but has something to say but has been overlooked, ignored, or dishonored in the process? What would you say to that person?
I think you have to choose, if you've been quiet, you have to choose to recognize, I do have something to offer that's of worth. Whether or not somebody adopts that, invites that, listens to that, is their choice. And so in the situation that you're referring to, I can remember sitting on that couch, having been dismissed as unimportant and having nothing to say, and very clearly choosing, I can disengage and sit here and twiddle my thumbs while the boys meet and talk business, or I can stay engaged and not push myself into the conversation, but just be listening and looking and looking for an opportunity where I have something to add value. And that's exactly what happened, where I chose to stay engaged. Pretty soon I was able to speak into that man's life and give him an opportunity to really encounter God with where his life was at. So I think the first thing is, I'm not going to, for the quieter person, it's choosing, I do have something of value to add to this conversation. I'm not necessarily going to yell and scream and throw a tantrum if I don't get listened to, but I am going to stay engaged and look for opportunities to speak in, and if that's invited or if there's a place, then certainly speak up. I think too, many wives, you've just, and I say wives because it's typically that way, not always. Ladies, it is time to let your husband know, I have something to say, and if he's not listening, then, and so the language I would use is, I know you value me, but you're not listening when I say this, or I have something to offer. So you're wanting to affirm that you trust his heart, but you're also wanting to really clearly draw his attention to the problem, to the issue.
And what do you do when your husband is blind and deaf to this and just literally cannot see it? He's ignorant, dumb. It's actually Psalm 73 talks about this. I was ignorant and dumb in your very presence. And this is from personal experience. How do you navigate that when the person closest to you that says they love you but they're not listening, how do you navigate that?
Great question. I think there's been times in the past when I have been praying about that and frustrated, and the Lord said, say nothing, leave it to me. And so there are times, I do believe, when you just zip your lips and ask and trust the Lord to, you know, whack your spouse around the head with a 4x2. And there's other times when you've got to speak up, and if they're not listening, then it's time for, you know, your own 4x2, obviously not a physical one, but you might say something like, honey, I have tried talking to you about this a number of times, and each time I do, you dismiss me, you're not listening, and so here's what I'm going to do as a result of that. Here's, and it might be, you know, I'm trying to think of a great example, but I'm not going to engage with you over that conversation, because every time we talk about it, you ignore what I say anyway. And so pretty soon he's going to get, or he or she is going to get a message of, oh, there's actually, you've got to do something that's going to bring attention and bring a little bit of pain. If people won't be motivated out of the love that's in their heart, then sometimes you've got to bring a little bit of pain. I'm going to step back. So I have another family member right now in our extended family who I'm giving feedback to, and who is just not listening, just not getting it. And so I made the decision to just draw a line in the sand and say, hey, I'm really feeling dishonored in this relationship, and you keep giving me a message of absolute dishonor and lack of love. I'm not going to play happy families with you while you continue to do that. So here's what I'm choosing. You're choosing that. As a result, my decision is to take a bit of a step back until you can recognize that the way you're behaving is really detrimental to this relationship.
How important in that regard, and I know this has been for us also, is having a third party. Mm-hmm. And what would you look for, especially when this is high stakes? This is someone you're living with. This is your husband or your spouse or somebody, you know, the further out they go, it's a different level, but it could be. I mean, there could be a business partner. It could be a leader in the city or a spiritual leader. How important is having a third party involved in that for your own benefit, and then in terms of possibly engaging? And who would you look for in that regard?
Yeah, I think that's huge. If you can agree on that with your spouse, with your business partner, whatever it is, to have a third party there, because suddenly it goes from your opinion versus your spouse, he, she said, she said, to here's an, you know, a third party that's listened to both sides. We started meeting with a marriage and family therapist. She's a trained person. She's been phenomenal. And her speaking up in the first session, having heard very little of the details, and telling you that you had some issues was huge, because I'd been saying the same kind of things for a long time.
For years.
But around that specific incident for a year, and you had not been listening. And so for somebody outside to come in and simply say, here it is, here's the, put her finger on it, was huge. And I think in all sorts of other environments or other situations, it's great. Find somebody who doesn't have a stake, you know, in either camp, somebody who is independent. If you can, even if it's for a short time, start meeting with somebody who's a professional. We've met with some other people, wonderful people, but just not as helpful as somebody who is trained and who is independent and who can look at things from a very different perspective than just your friend down the road who might have something to say.
So obviously, depending on what it is, I mean, in marriage and family therapists, get a professional, someone who's independent, someone's got a reputation, someone you can trust. The qualifications are critical. I mean, that's personal experience has been huge. If it's not that, I mean, I know having somebody beforehand that you can talk to, like before there's a problem, have a third party. I mean, if that's one thing that I've learned, is that, oh, we can just work this out because we're both mature adults and you and I. But the reality is, no, we see things very, very differently. How important is it to find somebody earlier on, before there's a problem, that you can just have a healthy conversation with, independent of the stakeholder? And what would you look for in that person?
Well, someone that I think it's great to have somebody like that, and that if there's not a problem, that could be friends who you have a really candid relationship with. You know, I'm thinking if you don't have the finances to have a therapist on speed dial all the time, somebody again professional who's trained is fantastic. I think it is great to invest when there's not a massive issue, because it's better, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth, you know, a ton of cure. It's better to prevent getting into that place. And sometimes that can be, like, I know, Andy, you've got a team of guys who you talked through things, actually several teams of guys that will talk to you, and you have a baseball bat with everybody's signature on it saying, hey, if I need a whack upside the head because I'm being a jerk and you see it, then you have my permission to do that. So I think that's really healthy, because sometimes I'm sure they're saying things to you that help me and help the family, just because they're adjusting and you've set a relationship up like that. So it doesn't have to be even, I don't have strong relationship with those guys, but you do. So they're speaking into your blind spots. So I think that's huge as well. I have some friends in a less formal way, the same kind of thing. Like, am I off base here? This is what I'm thinking, but am I off base? Speak to me if I've got a blind spot. So I think somebody, whatever, whether it's a small group leader, but who has permission to speak to you about your blind spots, because we all have them. And those are the things where I'm so entrenched because I can't see my brokenness or my, you know, whatever it is in that area, that you can talk to me and talk to me and talk to me, but I just can't hear because I, you know, I've shut off somebody speaking and I can't see that I've got a problem.
So I'm looking for somebody that is obviously can understand the language that I'm talking. If that's business, get somebody in business that can point out where, dude, you're about to step into a big hole. If it's marriage, you don't want to ask somebody that's never been married for marriage advice. I mean, not. Just some common sense there. You're looking for someone that is a truth teller. I love you enough to tell you the truth. Someone that walks in, they're not going to take up your offense, or they're not going to align with you, but they're actually going to be able to speak the truth in love. And there are people like that, but it's having that conversation up front and jumping into that. A final question on this is, how do you keep your heart humble and not just get hard-hearted? When you navigate people, I mean, with all that's been going on the last 12 months, there's been so much different opinions, different attitudes, different behaviors, different outcomes. How do you keep your heart humble and soft in the process?
I think it takes a lot of work sometimes, particularly in a season like this. I have this kind of reset button, internal reset button that I have to keep pushing. And to be honest, I'm at the point where I need to get away for a couple of days because my reset button needs changing out. It's been pushed too many times. What I mean by that is, you know, I get offended by something, somebody does something, and I'm like, oh, that just so irritates me. And next time I see them, that irritation is still sitting there. So I have to keep going, wipe the slate clean, just wipe the slate clean. Okay, just pretend like nothing's happened. So that takes a lot of work. I think the other thing I'm learning to do is, I'll share a story from when I was in my 20s. I had a brother that had an intellectual disability, and so that was a part of my world, and I worked in a home with some very, very severely disabled teenagers, young men, most of them. One of them was very, very crippled. His body was totally misshapen. The only part of his body he really had control over was two fingers that he could reach out a very small amount. And so all the other clients in this house where I worked would go to bed in the evening early, and he and I, when I was in charge of caring for them, he and I would sit and watch TV, and I'd prop him up on the couch behind me, and I would sit on the floor in front of him, and I would allow him to reach his two little fingers out and touch my hair at the back of my head, because it was the only... it was the only thing he could do, and it felt a very human thing to want to be able to initiate touch with another human being, and he didn't get to do that anywhere else in his life. And so I think that's the image now when I'm irritated, when I want to get angry with somebody, is his name was Shane, and I think of Shane, and I look at people's feeble attempts to reach out, and you know, it's like somebody is doing something that's so crazily wrong, in my opinion, is so selfish or is so whatever, so ungodly often, to be honest. And if I can look deeply enough, I can see, oh, that person is really crippled, and that thing that they're doing that annoys me, in the midst of it, there's two little fingers reaching out to touch me or to touch goodness or to do the right thing. And so if I can recognize the heart of people, for the most part is good, and where it's not good, it's because they're crippled and broken, then I can keep my own heart towards them soft and tender. And it's easy to look at the outward thing, and I'm thinking of somebody right now who drives me crazy, and I can, as I even just talk about this, I can feel the tenderness come when I recognize that most of what they do that drives me crazy actually comes from a really broken place that needs, you know, needs attention or needs certain stimulus to feel good. So that's how I work. I'm trying to keep remembering in the midst of all those things that, you know, want to offend me, the people that are driving me crazy. I'm like, okay, if I can just see that they can only reach out two little fingers, then I'll have tremendous grace for all the other things that they're so crippled they can't do.
So good, Janine. So, I mean, in hearing that, it's one is that recognize your limitations, that when you need to go away, you need to get away. And that in our house, that's like getting away from her husband and her four children and having some me time, because when I'm working full time at home and then there's four kids that are continually, hey, mom, yeah, you need some space. And so we're working on that. And then also the perspective. That's a beautiful, beautiful story with Shane, and seeing that changes everything. I know you've been such a gift to me in terms of a gift from God, literally, in your perspective and the way you see things and in your refusal to be just wagging the tail and skip along behind me, but actually you've spoken truth that's literally saved my life. And so I'm so grateful for that. So thank you. Second thing is I want others to access this. So I'm going to post a link below, and I didn't tell Janine this, but I do know that we've agreed to this, so this will be okay. Is if you're thinking, you recognize that you're in a spot where in your business and your life, you'd want someone to walk you through that, whether that's helping you find somebody outside of your circle to be a sounding board, an advisor, wise counsel, to ask you the questions that no one else is asking, then find out more. You could actually walk with Janine, whether that's individually or as a group. There's opportunities to do that. So Janine, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for investing in me and helping us and our family. And I just know the fruit of that is just so, so good. So if you've been listening, I trust this has been super valuable for you. And we will catch you again next week.